Hello, and thank you for joining me on Talk Exchange with Victor Ayara. My name is Victor Ayara. On August 10th of 2020, the Midwest part of the Midwestern part of the United States was hit with a derecho. Now, I never knew what derecho was. I never heard about it. It sounded like someone's name. It sounded like the name of a small town or city. But I can tell you that one thing that really shocked everyone was that the derecho caused a widespread high wind and spawned an outbreak of low-class tornadoes. For the first time, I almost shouted, "Up NEPA!" in America, because the light was off. And for someone who has lived in America for 7 years now, it was a sad reminder of where I came from originally, where steady power supply was something that we never just had all the time. Anyway, I'm not going to bore you with all of that. What happened was that for 15 minutes, the derecho hit Iowa bad. And in the wake of it, people's homes were destroyed. Businesses were destroyed. Roofs were blown away and trees were falling on buildings. On this edition of Talk Exchange, we're going to talk about that unfortunate incident and the damage that occurred, and of course, individuals who stepped up to offer some sort of relief to the people that were affected in that incident. My guest on this edition of Talk Exchange, I actually have two guests. The first one is someone who experienced derecho himself, and he is a community mobilizer. He is someone that spends time getting to know the community, and when the occasion rises, he steps up to meet the needs of those communities. Rama Muzo is the president and chief executive officer of Intercultural Center of Iowa, out of Cedar Rapids. Rama, thank you so much for making the time this morning.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you so much, Richard.
Thank you very much. And of course, the second person that I have on the show is someone that I have come to love and admire. He is also a community leader, and he is a relationship consultant, and he's the kind of man that can help you even sell water to Eskimos. He is that good. In his previous roles, and he's been in the coaching industry for a long time, but in his previous role, he actually helped salespeople to be at the top of their game and to generate results. Welcome with me, my brother, my friend, Brian Adeni Williams. Brian, good morning to you.
Good morning, Victor. Thank you.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. So, Rama, I will start with you. Tell us about, but before I do, what both of you have done is totally remarkable in our community and in the state of Iowa. And it also goes to see that the little that we do can go a long way. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably are wondering, what is the connection between these two gentlemen? So when derecho hit, Brian, who represents One Voice DSM, a collective, an African organization that brings together young professionals from all walks of life, and old professionals too, before somebody thinks that I'm only talking about the young. So the young and old African diasporans living in the state of Iowa, we bring, One Voice brings all of these people together. So One Voice did a great job of rallying around and raising funds to help out the community in Cedar Rapids. And that is where Rama Muzo comes in. Make sense? All right, gentlemen, now that we have established the relationship between the two, I will start with Rama. Tell me, what is, where were you when derecho hit? And what was your first reaction? How did you feel?
I mean, I think this is one of the most scariest thing I've ever encountered. It just happened. I was on my lunch break and I decided to go back to the house. It was around 12 and I was like, you know, just something told me, hey, you know, just go to the house a little bit, because, you know, as we know, kids are not at school anymore and all the other stuff. So I normally, during the middle of the day from work, I would just rush home a little quick to kind of check on, you know, I have my teenager kids and all the other stuff. So the minute I pull on the driveway, I start hearing the sirens, you know, going on. And I'm like, well, normally this is not the third Monday of the month where they do the test, and this doesn't sound like test. So I rushed in and I turned the TV on, and the TV was flickering. And this kind of happened really quick. And when that took place, then I had to get my kids and have to go to the basement. And I'm telling you, it was just something that I've never, first of all, I was in denial. So I, after like about 5-10 minutes, I came upstairs so I could look at the window to see what I'm hearing, because I hear a lot of wind, a lot of rains and all the other stuff, and the destruction in my front yard and the backyard. I mean, it was just amazing. And I mean, it was just, I mean, it was something that you only see it in the movies. So I had to run down in the basement, and it didn't take really long. It was about 45 minutes. But once all is done, and I think I have my Mzungu neighbors that, you know, came in and they were knocking on the doors, and I was like, okay, this is interesting. So I opened the door. It was my neighbor who was just kind of checking the damage and all the stuff. But that only took about 45 minutes.
I can imagine, right, man.
I mean, I've never seen anything,
you know,
like
in the heart of it all. Because just so you know, dear listeners, Cedar Rapids was one of the worst hit areas in Iowa. Brian, where were you when the derecho hit Iowa?
I was actually at home. And, you know, it's funny, you know, since we are at home, a lot of times, funnily enough, I haven't been watching as much TV. So I actually didn't know what was coming, you know. So I just know, looking out the window, I heard and I saw the level of wind and rain that was outside. And I saw, like, you know, when I looked out in my backyard, I saw, like, I think there was, like, debris. Well, not really debris, but you know, items from my neighbor's house, like, flying, you know, kind of coasting across my yard. I was like, wow, what's going on, you know? And it was pretty bad. So I know, and I'm very lucky, you know, we're very lucky that we were not hit as much, because we didn't even, you know, tell the kids and everybody to go downstairs, because my wife and I didn't know what was coming. It was only after the experience that we saw how bad it was. But we also experienced our light going out, you know, and it was actually out for like 3 days where I was at. So it was something, you know. We lost a lot of food as a result, you know. But I tell you, I did not see it coming. And, you know, the reason I was actually moved was, you know, what happened in Cedar Rapids could have happened in Des Moines. You know, we were just lucky.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Brian. And talking about the food, I tell you, I really miss the food that went bad that time. You know, I care a lot about the food, man.
Same here.
I care a lot about the food, man. You know, if you can ask my wife, you can ask my kids. I don't play with food. We don't miss food. And so, yes, very sadly. Anyway, let's come back to Rama. So Rama, this has happened, and what was the next thing? Because I know that we're going to get to the part where it comes, you begin to take in, take stock of what has been damaged, right? So walk us through that.
Correct. So, of course, I mean, we lost power, and as just normal, because something like this normally doesn't happen. So you're in denial, like, you know, oh yeah, it's just the wind or something like that. Actually, as a matter of fact, I had a meeting at 2 o'clock with somebody. I still went.
Are you kidding me?
Left the house to go to my meeting. Like everything was supposed to be just normal. However, on my way, I didn't know how bad it was. I mean, I was in denial. I was in shock. So I was still processing everything that happened. But what really hit me is I was trying to leave my house. I couldn't because there's trees on block the front, block the back on the door. Now, I mean, the road on our street. So and I couldn't go to, you know, to my meeting. So I had to pull back. And I called, you know, a couple of people that I was going to meet with them, and actually I couldn't get out of them. So I was like, you know, I decided to stay home and just process everything. And that's where, like, in the evening, and you know, the difference is my neighbors, I think they're more prepared than me. I never own a chainsaw. The people had chainsaw cleaning the road and trying to at least find a way to pass through. And later on in the evening, I was able to kind of drive around, and that's when I saw the destruction. But even that, I didn't understand the extent of destruction, especially on the southwest side of town, until about maybe a couple of days, because we didn't have power, we didn't have anything. So my first priority was to figure out, what are we going to do tonight? What are we going to eat? There's no power anywhere. So figuring out all those logistics, I think on the day one was a priority. Day two, that's when we start kind of catching on the news and even figuring out some of the my offices, because my offices are on the southwest side of town. So after when on my way to the office, that's when I saw the apartments, how demolished they were, like, and the damage that has been caused. And so that's when I started actually kind of freaking out a little bit.
People were affected. Tell us about the African community in Cedar Rapids. How would you describe the extent of damage and, of course, the how affected they were with this derecho?
Oh my goodness! It's, as you know, as most of our Africans and most of the immigrants and refugee community, everybody, the African here in Cedar Rapids, which make up a large population, they reside on that southwest of town. The challenge is because everybody is on that side of town, and that's where the most damage was actually occurred. So the majority of people in Cedar Rapids that were hit the most were the African community, because we all live together, you know, we just, you know, as you know how we do it. So we have about 4 apartment complexes. These are big, huge complexes that they were destroyed. Like, I'm talking about the roof just gone. And mind you, this happened during the day where people were at work. So because of COVID and all the other stuff, they most of the parents were at work, but the kids were at home by themselves. So, and then, so we had, I mean, it was a chaos for a lot of people. People were scrambling, leaving for more work and coming home actually to no home, because those apartments were completely demolished. And we even have an incident that this mom had a 5-day baby that was when the roof and everything was falling, she was protecting her baby, so she had a cut on her arm and was bleeding like crazy. And then when the storm ends, a friend, she had to throw a baby in a safe place. They came and took her to the hospital.
Oh my goodness.
But because of the language barrier,
oh my goodness,
they didn't know she had left a 5-day baby at home. They had to go back home to get her, you know. And I mean, there's so many stories. If I tell you, like, there's so many stories. And then the other challenging too is the people like us and other community organizer people would normally do, we're also scrambling what we're going to do with our kids, with, you know, like with our food at home, and how is it going to work? Because we didn't have power, we didn't have, and we didn't have gas. That's how much we didn't realize how much electricity we depend. The gas station wouldn't work. There was no power. So we had to drive to, like, I think I was at the quarter tank. So by the time I did my runs, I was running on E already. I had to go to figure out to go to Iowa City to get some gas, to come back and figure out even what we're gonna do with, you know, with the food and all the kind of stuff. So I think the first few days, it was horrible for so many people because even the people that could help, they were trying to get situated. So I basically had to take my kids to Texas. That's where most of my friends and family are.
Wow.
And then came back, tried to mobilize the help to the community and all the other stuff. But because I had the resources to do that, we had so many people that did not have the resources to do that.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I can imagine the extent of devastation, of course, the chaos, the confusion that people would probably have been facing at that time. Brian, let's talk about your part in this, because what you have done, I dare to say, has not really been something that we do a lot in the African community. How did you connect to Rama, and how did you, and when I mean you, I mean One Voice, how did you come about the idea of trying to help out?
Well, that's a good question. You know, very similar to Rama's story, you know, if you look at, you know, I didn't understand how serious this was until I got into the street and saw what was happening. You know, the trees and everything that had fallen. And, you know, it was clear to me that things needed to be done. So luckily I was blessed to have some friends. And so, you know, I had my family with, you know, we all were able to spend our nights with very, very dear friends to us that live locally. But to your point, what happened was I had one of our board members actually shared with me a video from a dear friend of ours. Her name is Nancy Marazzi, and she also advocates for African communities, and I believe she was actually out there helping out, so kudos to her. But she when she was there, she actually captured some video about the extent of the damage and the impact. Mm-hmm. And I think, and you know, they say seeing is believing, right? So I had no idea, you know, what was going on. You know, yeah, I did see some YouTube, you know, highlights and things, and I was like, wow, you know, this was actually a hurricane. What in Des Moines, Iowa, do we even have that? You know, I'm thinking like, wow. But when I saw that video, I was moved. I immediately, I think for me, what it was, I realized it could have happened to us. But the thing that got me the most was, this is a marginalized community, right? This is a community that's very misunderstood, you know, oftentimes neglected, you know, kind of to fend for themselves, whether, you know, not they're not really, they don't really access the resources that, you know, now they might have access to it, but they just don't know where to get it maybe. But, you know, this is a community that left where they were to come here to find a safe haven. And then, wow, they come here, set up, trying to do the best they can, and next thing you know, they're in crisis. And we're doing all this in the midst of a pandemic where everyone is struggling. So I'm looking at, like, I could not imagine. And that video showed, there was a gentleman who was talking in a different, I think it was Swahili, which I don't speak, but Nancy was translating. And basically, you know, he shared that story. I mean, I could see that there was no roof on that building, on the entire, I mean, you know, this is an apartment complex with like zero roof. Mm. You know, you're looking at debris, like roofs that have caved in. You're looking at like total loss for like property, all destroyed, drenched, just totally messed up. You know, I was like, what are these guys thinking? Like, who are they leaning on? What's going to happen? And so basically we were challenged, man, like, what can we do? You know, what can we really do? And so, you know, we had never fundraised as an organization before for any cause like this, but we were really moved. And we also know that, you know, the African community, a lot of times, sometimes we haven't done a good job of being able to support one another.
That is true.
Mostly because we're fragmented, and I don't know, maybe there's a perception that we feel we have to fend for ourselves. But we wanted to change that narrative, and we wanted to make sure that even though these guys were not in Des Moines, they are African brothers and sisters, and we want to make sure that we can help and change that narrative so that we can at least set an example of how we can help each other. And
Thank you so much, Brian.
This is very powerful. Thank you.
Thank you so much. The message is very important. I mean, just to listening to you, sometimes people think, oh, I can't make a difference. Oh, yes. I don't have enough. It's so small what I have. Now, there's an African proverb that says, if you think you are too small to make a difference, you haven't spent a night with a mosquito.
Yes. That's a good
because
one.
As tiny as a mosquito is, a mosquito can make your life miserable. So we can make a difference regardless of how small we are. Rama, back to you now. Monies have been collected. It might not be much, but it is something that no matter how small can make a difference. How are you able to utilize these funds? And what has been the response, apart from one voice, DSM? How are you able to utilize these funds to bring soccer or ameliorate some of these little sufferings here and there? Because there's no suffering as is little, but of course, little things like people being able to get food, people being able to get, little things. How far is that going for you in the events after the retro?
Actually, one thing is I want to just add to what does it symbolic it is for what One Voice have done. You know, I'm in a nonprofit, industry business, and nonprofits as a charity organization, we normally do come to rescue and help people actually in so many things, different missions on people. Majority of the recipients of nonprofits or the target population that normally benefit from nonprofits are people of color, at risk population, people from low economic, backgrounds and things like that. And majority of them are Black people, including some of the, the Africans and immigrants. The challenging part is over 90% of the people who run nonprofits are white. So there's this big picture in the industry that, in order to get help, you have to have the whites take over these things, do something about this situation. However, this situation is different. Our organization is run by Africans, and we've doing this, and it's not by accident. It's after being in the industry for quite some time and realize the gaps in services and even in some of the things that were actually well intended to help others, but normally they don't end up helping people because of either cultural lenses and things like that, or some of the opportunity gaps that exist. And this is the first time, actually, since I've been here. Normally, I will fundraise, I'll go ask for funds, but I never really receive any support financially from Africa-led organizations. So for me, this is so meaningful, like with everything that I do actually stand. And the reason why we all are, who have been here or have been in a Western country and have been developed, we normally complain to our governments, like, oh my goodness, the governments are, they are really, getting all these aids from the white nations. But we have, as Africa, as a country, we have a ton of potential to actually become very self-sustainable and do things. So this is, to me, was very symbolic in so many ways. For one, we were able to actually do it by ourselves instead of just relying on just the normal, as we know, the white people doing this, and in regard to the funds that have been collected, because right now, actually, the needs were evolving as we're going. Initially, was even figuring out things like food. You know, that's why we did events where we're doing the cookouts, like with Nancy, we're doing, you know, providing water and all these other stuff. Now, the needs have shifted because FEMA stepped in, did some hotel, and they ended the hotel, temporary hotel set. So we have individuals that are at the shelters. We have individuals who are looking at housing. Mm. So those who are starting the housing, we have to remember, wow, they're starting from the scratch. They do not have anything. They lost everything. So the funds that we have, what we've been doing is actually from purchasing household items, you know, things like paper towel, things like towers, things like comforters, blankets, like all these things, like as things as lotions. And we're not talking about just the normal other lotion. We talk about cocoa butter and Vaseline, because the donation that we got on the lotion, some of these lotion don't work for our skin. You know, so like those items are really big, and also because we're trying to stretch the dollar, we have in rare occasions, like we've helped people with deposits to get an apartment, and especially we put the priority on women and kids who actually really do need some help. That's where the funds will be going in, helping them getting the deposits so they can start their lives. And I want to point out one thing about this particular population. Majority, they work at the meat processing factories, and if we do remember during COVID, that's where the kitchen of COVID. So majority, not only that they were forced to work during this time, they actually contracted COVID. Personally, I know about 400 people from this particular community that had COVID. They recover, of course. I mean, for whatever reason, it seems that most of us Africans didn't really die from it. They recover. And then here, they fought COVID. They actually had contracted the disease. They recover, and now they were hit hard on this. They have to fight again to actually get out and get their life, put the pieces together. So, I mean, there's so many levels to this, but I cannot thank enough, and even just reiterate, the support financially that we're able to get on this one here, but the symbolic, it's beyond words for everything actually.
Rama, so it could not have been said better. Thank you, gentlemen, so much for what you're doing for the community. And I totally get it. This is a double whammy, if you like, for people who are trying to, come to terms with what is called, quote unquote, the new normal of COVID. We're making 3 steps forward and 10 steps backward. And then the derecho hits. And of course, these are marginalized communities or minority communities, as you can imagine. So it's a lot. But you also mentioned the symbolism, yes, of this cooperation, the symbolism of this, of what the One Voice DSM team has done. And Brian, how, yes, I want to ask you, how easy was it to mobilize people to part with their monies in a pandemic to help out because of a derecho? Because there's no pun intended here, but it's not easy. So tell me how you managed to do that.
You're very true. I think I guess my coaching background and the I think what I was able to do personally was to keep the vision, to keep the importance, the cause, the significance of their donation in front of everybody, consistently. What I did was, I stayed in front of the group and let them know what people were going through. I followed up with Rama and to find out what people needed, and I stayed in front of people so that people understood the need. But I think what really made the difference was when I kind of shared with the group that, you know, we don't know if this is going to happen again, but if it does, it might be Des Moines and we would need help. And it's something that we should be, so long story short, staying consistent in reminding people of how important this is, and the benefit for us as a collective, is what really made all the difference.
I appreciate both of you. Yeah. Rana Muzo, President CEO of Intercultural Center of Iowa. Yeah. Thank you for taking the time, sir. And the message is clear. The community still needs help.
Thank you, sir.
It never stops. We're going to try. And when I say we, I mean us in the collective, in the African community, and of course, anybody listening to this podcast is actually longer than it normally is, but because the issue, we're talking about human lives, we're talking about people trying to pull through, a community trying to pull through in very tough times. I thank you for taking the time, Rama. And of course, Brian Adeniyi Williams, who is representing One Voice DSN, a collective, an African organization, African diaspora organization here in Des Moines, Iowa, who went around cap in hand, collecting monies to help the brothers out in Cedar Rapids, even though we were also affected in the Des Moines area. I thank you for your hard work, Brian.
Thank you. I'd like to, if you don't mind, just share one quick message that I just kind of want to put out there. You know, I do want to thank everyone that contributed. I realized people dug deep in order to kind of share and give and support. And it was amazing. But the message I have here is, you know, I took one thing from this Black Lives Matters movement, is that when we all come together and we stay persistent, we cannot be ignored. Eventually, as a collective, when we press forward and we come together and make it clear that there is something we need to achieve, we will not be ignored. People have to stop and listen and have to bring resources. They have to pay attention. So I just want to tell all my other African organizations out there, all, you know, people that are in parts of other organizations, supporters of minority groups that, you know, that you might not be of African descent, but I just want to say that we have needs. We want to, One Voice really wants to increase the contribution and influence of the African diaspora out here. And for my African organizations, I want you guys to understand that we're not in competition or anything. We're here to support. We would love as an organization to be the glue that brings us all together so we have a stronger presence and stronger impact in our communities. And then for our supporters, we just want you to know that we are here. Our communities are here. We're talented, we're blessed, and we're here to serve and do the best we can. So on behalf of One Voice, thank you guys for everything. And Victor, thank you for this wonderful opportunity to share. Appreciate it.
I appreciate both of you. Thank you very much. And this is where we're going to draw the curtain on this edition of Talk Exchange with Victor Ayara. It's been a pleasure speaking with two very community-minded Africans in the state of Iowa. And until I come your way next time, stay blessed, be positive, and be purposeful. Bye-bye.